Well, we had some very nice discussion yesterday evening on fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, some verses from the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that somehow by Krishna's arrangement just very nicely tied into the Bhagavatam discussion this morning. And so I'd like to tie the two of them together and move forward a little bit. Did a lively discussion this morning was a how-to session. When we come into the storms of life, how do we sustain our Krishna consciousness? How do we keep to the principles of devotion to Krishna in the midst of chaos, in the midst of confusion and conflict and strife in everyday life? How to? And using the luscious phrase against the storms. Going along and all of a sudden, where did this come from? This big storm. How do you maintain your Krishna consciousness through that circumstance? The Bhagavad Gita section yesterday evening was Krishna's describing four qualities that are there when one is on the path of liberation. And then Krishna further elaborated what further qualities that person exhibits when they reach transcendence. They're weathering the storms. They're staying fixed despite dualities. Someone came afterwards and said, I'm not sure what that means, dualities. So, dualities means yin and yang. Hot and cold, pleasure, pain, light and dark, winter, summer, happy, sad, friend, enemy, duality. This and that, opposites. And facing a life in which you go this way, and immediately you feel the pull of that way, and then you go that way, and you feel the pull of this way. Duality. The pushes and the pulls of material existence, or material energy. How do you stay neutral? You stay neutral by being transcendental, by not just neutral, by being attached to the personality of Godhead. And so this idea of the neutrality of Brahman realization, where one is indifferent to duality, is actually transcendence, or what Krishna says in the beginning of the fifth chapter, Bhagavad Gita, is what is called renunciation, or this neutrality towards duality. What is called renunciation is the same as linking oneself with the Supreme. Because without linking yourself with the Supreme, you're not going to maintain neutrality in the face of the storms of life. So, those series of verses goes to being fixed upon the Supreme and experiencing a joy from within, Brahmasukha, the transcendental happiness within, that's so joyful and so radiant of light that all darkness is dispelled. So you can still detect what's out there in the landscape of life. There's duality. But it doesn't determine your happiness and distress because you're filled with transcendental happiness. It's not your measure of happiness in life or success in life or did I achieve my goals in life depending upon configurations of matter. It's the happiness is your relationship with the Supreme. That was the Bhagavad Gita discussion. So, a relationship between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada said it in very simple language. The simple language is Bhagavad Gita is an undergraduate study and the Bhagavatam is the graduate study. Or in math, 2 plus 2 equals 4. And in higher math, 2 plus 2 equals 4. And in very advanced math, 2 plus 2 equals 4. But the application of that principle in higher math is far more intricate, but the principles remain the same. So what we learn in Bhagavad Gita is our undergraduate text. A, B, C, D, E, and then you can start to spell, and then you can write sentences, and then you can write composition, but it's still the ABCs. So in the Bhagavatam, the section that we were discussing this morning is the same idea as was discussed in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita by Krishna to Arjuna, but it's elevated to the graduate level of study, where there's it's Purana, so there's a history. It's not a fiction or mythology to teach us a lesson, it's history. And built within that history of Krishna's pure devotee, Maharaj Pariksit, we can learn how to fulfill chapter 5 Bhagavad Gita in a graduate level. Like, go out into the world and do it. Where things are complex. That's what we're getting. So that's what we're going to spend some time with this afternoon. The storyline is Maharaj Pariksit is encountering three personalities. One is Dharma in the form of a bull. Another is Mother Earth in the form of a cow. And the third is this beast of a person, the personality of Kali, who is harassing bull and Mother Earth. And they're very disturbed. There's an aggressor. We can use our modern language, a perpetrator and a victim. If you're going to sit right in the front, you're going to have to sit still, okay? If you want to jump around, you can go in the back and jump around. It's okay? Good deal? Okay. So each of these three personalities they're not figurative, they're features of our life. How do we address Dharma? How do we address Prakriti, material nature, Mother Earth, or literally Mother, that principle of motherhood in our life? And how do we address this vicious personality that may be in the path of we're going along very pleasantly and all of a sudden this very aggressive personality comes into the picture, and what do we do? It happens. Maybe not the personality of Kali, maybe just like a little puny agent or something. But somebody that's nasty. How do we address ourselves to that? The storm maker. He disturbs Prakriti and he disturbs Dharma and he's, we're next. How do we deal with those situations? So, what we discussed this, one of the things we discussed this morning is that all of this, because it's Maharaj Pariksit particularly, it's all unfolding in the life of a pure devotee of the Lord by a plan of the Lord. one might ask, we were discussing, why would the Lord plan for a bull to be beaten and Mother Earth to be insulted and this vicious personality to go doing vicious things? How can that be the plan of the Lord? And that was our part of the discussion. How can the Lord plan such a thing? Not exactly plan, but he sanctions such a thing. And according to Vishwanath Thakur, we discussed, this is particularly reviewed to catch the rest of you up to speed with what we talked about this morning. Two things in the plan of the Lord, which is not discernible by speculation, but the Lord can disclose if he so desires, and to those who are intimate devotees, pure devotees, like Maharaj Parikshit or our great acharyas, Krishna can disclose, this is my plan. So Prabhupada is disclosing, this was Krishna's plan. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. One plan was, Dharma was put into a situation where we, all of us, reading the Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing it, could concentrate our attention upon the personality of Godhead. His difficulty was to help us concentrate our attention on the personality of Godhead and to learn how to do it better. So he's happy to render service to the personality of Godhead like that. If it means, ouch, it's okay, because it's for the personality of Godhead's pleasure. And sure enough, if we read the Srimad Bhagavatam properly, that's exactly what happens. We'll see if we can get a little closer to that position this afternoon. Concentrating the mind on the personality of Godhead in great devotion. And the other was, the Lord's plan was to show the glories of Maharaj Parikshit. Look at how this pure devotee is addressing this situation, that situation, and that situation so expertly. He didn't lose focus upon the personality of Godhead for a second, although the situation was very complex. It was so complex that even Dharma himself was bewildered. We can move the direction of that speaker, it won't ring back. Just move it. Just turn it. Rotate. The other way. The other way. Very good. Excellent. 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 Okay. So that's the backdrop. We're addressing the deity, and that's the backdrop of the deity. No, approach the deity with the blessings of Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas. I'd like to read some of nice commentary, both from Prabhupada and our acharyas, on how are we to look at conflict situations that as our life unfolds we find ourselves addressing, either directly acting upon us or directly acting upon those dear to us, in either case calling upon us to make a decision how to act when there's a conflict situation. The first thing that Maharaj Parikshit does when he addresses that situation is he wants to discern, particularly from the persons involved, what's the cause of this wrongdoing? What's the cause of suffering? Because I'm the king, I don't want to see suffering. Or, in our case, I'm moving along in life and I don't want to see someone dear to me suffering. Well, I don't want to see myself suffering either. So, what's the cause? What's the cause of suffering? And for a devotee understands that not even a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Even our eyes cannot blink involuntarily without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. We can't digest our food involuntarily without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, etc. Voluntary or involuntary, nothing happens without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So, remotely, we can say, Krishna's the cause. He's sarva karana karana. But we don't want to place heaps and piles of blame on Krishna because all the bad things that happen, he's the cause. So how do we understand Krishna's relationship and the instruments of this world, their relationship with events that bring suffering or pain or injustice in the world? I'll read. Seeing all that occurs is Krishna's will or sanction, a devotee understands, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a person remains free from anxiety amid even the greatest difficulties. Krishna describes like that in Bhagavad Gita. Even in the midst of greatest difficulties, one's mind can remain fixed. Because here I am in a situation where ultimately everything is happening by the will of the Supreme Lord. It's not that we become emotionless and dull stones, but we don't become involved in that external energy of that kind of suffering, nor that kind of happiness. Oh, here comes a nice situation. I just got something I wanted. I tried for it very hard and I got it. Or I didn't even try for it very hard, it just landed in my hand. Look at that. Krishna's mercy. And then all of a sudden it disappears. Whoa, where did Krishna's mercy go? Still, all along, with maintaining this vision, he must practically act in the world while simultaneously remaining detached from the results of his actions. Notice the theme of Bhagavad Gita, staying fixed in self-knowledge and knowledge of the Supreme while at the same time being detached from the outcome of events in life. A phrase that I try to live and try to share with other devotees, how when you have deep relationships with other devotees, you naturally have care for them. But how to have caring that's detached, that doesn't implicate you in worldly suffering. What's detached caring? It's not I don't care caring. It's not that kind of detachment. It's caring. But a detached caring where ultimately everything rests in Krishna's hand. We make our best effort, sincere best effort, just this is like the discussion this morning. We make our endeavor. But the mercy of Krishna is ultimately what determines the outcome of things. And if Krishna's mercy goes left or right, duality now, it goes happy, sad, light or dark, pleasure, pain, up, down, winter, summer, whatever the configuration of duality is that Krishna brings as the outcome, Krishna is the well-wisher of everyone. And ultimately there's something of benefit for that individual somehow if they receive it in that way. So my service to that person is to help them see the hand of Krishna, mercy of Krishna, in each situation of life. Because that's reality. I may or may not understand it, but the mercy of Krishna is there. Certainly the hand of Krishna is there, and Krishna is merciful. So going along, this is now quoting from this morning we read 25, we're going to read 26 through 30. Because through 25, Maharaj Pariksit is addressing the bull, but he does it in sequence. First the bull, then the earth, then the personality of Kali. And he does each one really expertly. So we're now looking at Dharma, bull. How to enter into challenging situations of life and remain Krishna conscious. if things are ultimately happening by Krishna's, ultimately happening by Krishna's sanction, but Krishna does nothing, because he says it in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita how he, for example, he describes, he creates the system of Varnashram, Chapter Varna Maya Shrishtam, Shrishti, he creates Guna Karma Vibhagasha. Through quality and work, Krishna creates the system of prescribed duties. In the Rig Veda, it's in the Purusha Sukta Mantras, where the Supreme Personality of God is being praised as the Purusha, and the Purusha creates creation, and he creates the devas, and he creates the manus, and he creates the laws of mankind through which the manus administrate, and he creates the varieties of occupation for each of the living entities. So we have the means of connecting with him. But after he describes that in Bhagavad Gita, he says, actually, I don't do anything at all. Is that double talk or what? Is he saying, I do it, and then he says, I don't do it? The answer is, both are right. It's not double talk. He does so not directly, but through the agency of his material energy. It's difficult to understand the personality of Godhead because he conceals himself through the agency of his material energy. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrata mudhoyam navijanati. Krishna's describing those who are, it's not a very complimentary term, but he says mudhas, those that are fools, and Prabhupada takes it even stronger and says, fools and rascals, those that are bewildered, they just see the material energy and they can't see Krishna behind the material energy. It's like Prabhupada gives the example of a glove. You see the fingers of a glove moving. And that's really cool. Look at that. The fingers of the glove are moving. But they don't move on their own. There's fingers inside the glove that are moving, and that moves the glove. Yeah? So, Krishna is moving the material energy. Maya Dyakshena Prakriti. Prakriti moves because Krishna moves his Prakriti. But how does Prakriti move? It's not Krishna wiggles and then the energy moves. He doesn't have to do anything. He just wills it to be so, and it's so. That's the best kind of remote control I've ever seen. Even if there's some, you know, like a child has a toy, and the toy, like a little car or a boat or something, or a plane, and then they've got this little remote control gadget. So the plane flies and the boat sails, it moves around the pond. There's a little boy with his little remote control gadget. He's got to press the buttons or it doesn't go. Krishna doesn't have to press any buttons. He doesn't need a remote control gadget. He doesn't need technology. Because he's the cause of all causes. He just desires, and it's done. And when people see the thing done, they think, oh, look at the material energy, just did something. But one who has knowledge according to the Vedas knows matter doesn't move without the touch of spirit. And spirit and matter are both energies of the Supreme, and Krishna is the controller of both. I could desire to move the boat or do something. I can't do any of that without the sanction of the Supreme. For all of my might, I can try and try and try. If Krishna sanctions a little kinky's effort, can lift a mountain, if Krishna desires. And if Krishna doesn't desire, all the king's horses and all the king's men can't put Humpty Dumpty back together. else they tried. Our effort must be met by the mercy of the Lord. These two factors we were discussing. Effort, striving, sincerely, consistently making effort to serve Krishna nicely, and Krishna's mercy. And we're not in charge of Krishna's mercy. Krishna's in charge of Krishna's mercy. When we serve Krishna, we should understand it's on His terms. It's not on our terms. Krishna, I make a contract with you. Will you please sign? The contract says, I do this, and return in exchange you do that. Okay? You sign at the bottom, and we have a deal. If you don't sign the contract, Krishna, I tear up the contract and see you later. That's not devotional service, that's business. We don't do business with Krishna. We simply serve Krishna, knowing that by nature He's merciful, and His mercy will come, but it will come in His own way, it will come in His own time, and is completely in His hand. But by nature, He's merciful, and I have faith in that. And so I go on striving, endeavoring, to try to serve Krishna nicely. And I'm going down the path of life, and oh, look at this, here's this storm. Here's this problem. Religious principles, in the case of Maharaj Pariksit, religious principles are grossly being violated by a person in the dress of a king? Wow, this is horrible. And then we look to somebody else and say, do something. Can you do something? You're in charge here. Can you do something? So, Maharaj Pariksit is addressing that kind of a situation, so to teach us how to address that kind of situation. He is seeing that the energy of Krishna is acting, and even for Dharma personified, Dharma is becoming bewildered by that energy. What to speak of us and common people? Here's how Prabhupada writes. Although the bull, or the personality of religion, and the cow, the personality of earth, knew perfectly well that the personality of Kali was the direct cause of their sufferings, still, as devotees of the Lord, they knew well also that without sanction of the Lord, no one could inflict trouble upon them. According to the Padma Purana, our present trouble is due to the fructifying of seedling sins. This is a nectar of devotion lesson incorporated within the Bhagavatam. That is, past activities, they're stored. They're stored as seeds. And the storage system is really good. Better than Microsoft can ever figure out. Bill Gates would really become a multi-billionaire if he could figure this one out. How to store information where it's invisible. It's not just like on your hard drive. It's invisible. It's just stored in a seed. And it stays there practically indefinitely until the time factor comes along and nudges that seed. Okay, it's time. Start to sprout. Okay. Yes. And it's so the bija becomes kuta, it's a little sprout. And palon will come, it becomes almost ready to fructify. And then prarabdha. Prarabdha karma means that's what's happening right now. Oh. That's called prarabdha karma. It hurts. He hit me. But there are stages before that. It's just about to fructify, or it's starting to sprout, or still in a seed. There's these four stages. Padma Purana. So where did the seed come from? Or where did the prarabdha karma come from? It came from something that we did in the past, we chose something, we exercised our free will in a certain way, and according to the exercise of free will, Krishna made some arrangement so that within our body and our particular set of senses and the matter that the senses are contacting, something happened. Whatever that something was. It was a fire, or it was very cold, or somebody said something, or somebody didn't do something, or something. And then some impression is stored in a seed. It just hangs out. Cold storage. Long time. And as Krishna's time energy comes along and moves that seed. So according to Padma Purana, our present trouble is due to the fructifying of seedling sins. But even those seedling sins are gradually fade away by the execution of devotional service. Thus, even if the devotees see the mischief mongers, they do not accuse them for the sufferings inflicted. He did this to me. They can distinguish. The man took a club and he beat my legs. But he's not the cause of my suffering. The cause of my suffering is my past misdeeds, of which this is but a fructification. The devotees take it for granted that the mischief monger is made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings, thinking them to be God-given in small doses, for otherwise the sufferings should have been greater. Maharaj Prakshit wanted to get it. A statement of accusation against the mischief monger. But the bull and Mother Earth declined on the above-mentioned grounds. They saw the remote cause because they're Krishna conscious. But then, continuing on, they were two things. They were not wanting to say, Krishna is the cause of my suffering. Because that's an incomplete, and even, you know, literally a misunderstanding of the whole picture. The material energy, some say, because that was one of the things that Dharma says. Some say it's just a quality of prakriti. Prakriti sometimes brings pleasure, prakriti sometimes brings pain. When it's very cold, having a fan and air conditioning, oh, it's suffering. When it's very hot, pleasure. The fan is not changing at all. Our condition is changing. And so it's perceived differently. So here's some lectures that quotes from, or transcriptions of lectures from Srila Prabhupada on this very point. This is a lecture in Vrindavan in August of 1974, close to Janmashtami. Prabhupada's lecturing on first canto, chapter 5. Chapter 5 is where Narada is speaking to Vyas about the kind of literature that he should be writing. Prabhupada spoke. So, if we simply remember that Krishna has put me in this condition of life, I'm a Shudra. That is very nice. Tattena kampam susamikshamano bhujana evatma kritam vipakam. What is that? A devotee is satisfied always. He does not grudge that I am put into this condition. Why am I not put into condition of a king or a learned Brahmin? No. Quote, whatever condition Krishna has given me, that is all right. Tate anukampam means it is by His grace. By His grace I have got this position because my only business is to remember Krishna. That we can do at any stage of life. So, I'll read a couple more, but I want to emphasize, we're just going into the topic that we discussed this morning a little more deeply. When that storm comes, when you're going along and you're in the office and somebody is just crackers. What's going on? Or you're in school and one of the kids is acting like, whoa, I'm staying away from that person. How do I stay Krishna conscious in this situation? Et cetera, et cetera. This is very, very nice practical instruction Prabhupada is giving to us, his followers. Here's another one. This is a lecture again in Vrindavan 2 years later, September 1976. Prabhupada spoke. Don't think the things are taking place automatically, therefore, even in reverse condition. This is a term that Prabhupada used, reverse condition. Like, you know, you're going along in your car, zoom, zoom, zoom. And next thing you know, you're going in reverse. And you didn't put the car in reverse, you're just going in reverse. Like somebody slammed you in the front side or side and, whoa, what happened? I was going along, your officer, I was going along and all of a sudden, I was going in reverse. So he uses that phrase, the reversals of life. You don't expect it, you don't know where it's coming from, but suddenly it happens. Like, you know, the world's economy, people are all pumped up, we're making money and we're doing this and doing that, and all of a sudden the body falls out. Whoa! Where's it at? It's free fall, it just keeps going and going and going. Oh! That's an example of reversal. And life has its reversals. So, in such a situation, Prabhupada is guiding us. When such a storm or reversal of life happens, what do? How do you maintain your Krishna consciousness? Don't think that things are taking place automatically. Therefore, even in reverse condition, a devotee does not see that this thing is happening without direction of Krishna. No. Even if he is in adverse condition, he does not feel any pain because he knows that this adverse condition is also under the direction of Krishna, so I am fully surrendered to Krishna. Why should I take this adverse position as not mercy of Krishna? It is also mercy of Krishna. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano. 2 years later, he's quoting in Vrindavan the same verse. Bhujana evatma kritam vipakam. A devotee is not disturbed by any adverse condition. He takes that as a gift of Krishna. Tatte anukampam. It is Krishna's mercy. There is consistency in how Prabhupada trained his followers. Although I am put into difficulty, that's clear. It is Krishna's mercy, that's also clear. So anyone who takes it in that way, mukti pade sudaya bhak, he's going back home, back to Godhead, guaranteed. Because he takes everything as Krishna's mercy. So Prabhupada is preparing his followers to meet those circumstances of life that happen. They don't come invited. They're uninvited. But all of a sudden it happens. And then sometimes it's like it just keeps happening. Not like one, but a whole series of such things. I'm losing my composure. What do I do? Again, in Vrindavan. 1 month later, in October. Krishna is always merciful. Therefore, devotees never take anything as not merciful. Check me. Krishna is merciful. The devotee never takes it that Krishna is not merciful. Tatte anukampam. They take everything from Krishna as sympathy. Anukampa. Tate. Anukampam susamikshamanam. One who can see this anukampa. Mercy. Or, he's also said, sympathy. Krishna cares. And he's carrying this filled with mercy. Boy, if it doesn't look like mercy, what if it looks like the opposite of mercy? Take it as mercy, because Krishna is merciful. So somehow, this difficulty has a great opportunity of mercy of Krishna packaged within it. Although I may not see that, let me faithfully abide in that principle and think how to serve Krishna best in this circumstance. And then one is very peaceful. Although the circumstance may be challenging and taxing and awful in appearance. One who can see this anukampa in reverse condition of life, the compassion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, mukti pade sudaya, bhakta's right to liberation becomes guaranteed. So now connecting this with the Bhagavad Gita chapter 5 that we discussed last night, at least some persons here were present for that. Krishna is describing one who is on the path of liberation. He gives four characteristics. Mind, absorbed in thought of Krishna. Intelligence, absorbed in how to serve Krishna. His faith, completely fixed in Krishna. His shelter is in Krishna alone. That person is on the path. So that person is on the path when meeting a feature of duality that says, oh my God, look at that. They stay, those four things stay fixed. That person, mukti pade svadaya bhak, because they see anukampa. Krishna, by nature, is merciful. And I may not understand, repeating here, but I may not understand just how this is mercy. But there is mercy of Krishna here. I have that faith. My faith is fully reposed in Krishna. It's not in this configuration of matter, because I've already learned that's a false shelter. That's a program that I don't want to play. It's a cheating program. It looks like this, in fact it's that. So, I'm not going there. Well, thank you. Thank you, but no thank you. I'm going to stay over here. Krishna. And my shelter is with Krishna. So the kaleidoscope can keep moving. That's okay. That's not my happiness. My happiness is within. And that happiness, when the soul connects with the super soul, that's happiness. And that happiness is so profound. It radiates in all circumstances of life. That's what our verses from Bhagavad Gita yesterday were describing. One more. This isn't Vrindavan, this is Los Angeles. Same message though. 1975. The devotee is suffering from some reverse condition. This is 6th canto, chapter 1. This is the prelude to the Ajamila story. It's looking at the suffering condition described at the end of the 5th canto, the hellish planets and persons that are in that condition. The devotee is suffering from some reverse condition. Then, he is feeling very much obliged to Krishna. My dear Lord, it is your great mercy that I am suffering. This is the devotee. He is suffering, and he is taking it as great mercy of God. Tate anukampam. Anukampa. Anukampa means mercy. So it is your mercy. Tate anukampa. Susamikshamano. Bhujana evatma katam vitakam. So, the rest of what we discussed this morning was when one has that, even the desire to have that kind of faith in Krishna, that's a devotee. We may not be there. It's very easy to say, I'm not there. But if we desire to have that kind of faith in Krishna, even desire to have such a desire to have that faith in Krishna, we're on the path. As far as Rupa Goswami is concerned, we're on the path of Uttam Bhakti. We're on the path of pure devotional service. And just continue to follow under the guidance of Rupa Goswami or the followers of Rupa Goswami. Continue to follow. Anushilana means to follow the behavior, the conduct, the character of such devotees as Rupa Goswami or the followers of Rupa Goswami. That, for your information, that's what we're supposed to be doing, is following Rupa Goswami. To stay in such association and try to imbibe the spirit of those who are actually exemplifying that standard. And you're on the path. Like Krishna described in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the path of liberation. And that liberation isn't just, let me out of here. Not that kind of liberation. Yikes, it's terrible here, let me get out. The liberation of being very contented, peaceful, happy, simply serving Krishna in any condition, whether it's this feature of duality or that feature of duality. At least that gift, that mercy, one becomes the rightful inheritor of. The example that's given in that verse is just like by law, not in this country, but in some countries, the Vedic system is, if the eldest son of the father survives his father, what happens with the property of the father? Not a question of a will, it's just a question of automatically, the property of the father becomes inherited by the eldest son, isn't it? That's the system. So what if your father is Krishna? In fact, Krishna is our father. Aham bija pita pita. He's our pita. He's the father of all fathers. He's our father. And if we just continue in the course of this life faithfully in that position, we inherit the property of our father. What's the property of our father? It's the spiritual world. Meaning is, we go to the spiritual world. We go back to Godhead. Just by remaining faithful on that path. Are there challenges to do so? Sure there are challenges to do so. Just continue faithfully on that path. And the kingdom of God will be your rightful inheritance. Not like you own it, you can put it in your pocket and sell it to somebody. Not that kind of inheritance. But you can reside there. With Krishna, eternally. Just by that reposing of intelligence, mind, the faith and shelter in Krishna. So to enhance that, what we heard this morning is the next two verses, Maharaj Pariksit says, here's how to restore a broken condition. And by, we meet people whose lives are broken. We find in our own lives things are broken. And we need to restore them. So he gives four principles. Austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that there's a rule that sometimes applies, in this case it does, that when there's a sequence, the last thing in the sequence is the most important. So in this case, truthfulness is the most important, confirmed by the fact that that's the one leg of Dharma that's remaining, truthfulness. So based upon that truthfulness, we can give attention to the principle of truthfulness, and, we discussed this morning, give attention to the other pillars of Dharma or legs of Dharma in the form of prescribed simple austerity, prescribed cleanliness, internal and external, prescribed exhibitions of mercy, and continuing to restore the original, not just to give the Bill Clinton example, the George Washington example. I cannot tell a lie, I chopped down the cherry tree. Oh, he's a truthful man. That's Kali Yuga truthfulness. You chop down the cherry tree, and then you say, I did it. There's higher levels of truthfulness by far. And the higher levels of truthfulness have to do with the realms of spirit. That in truth, my real identity is spirit soul. And in truth, that spirit soul has a master. And that master is Krishna. And in truth, my constitutional position is simply to serve Krishna. That's truth with a capital T. So we abide by truth. We try to restore that in our life. And the other forms, the pillars, and as we, of Dharma, and as we do so, the features that are very embarrassing and very crippling, the features of pride, the feature of illicit combination between men and women that goes on in this world, so disturbing that we can become freed from that. We must become freed from that. But culturing these positive things helps us become relieved from those negative things, and as we discussed this morning, what the goal of that? So that we can really concentrate our mind upon the absolute truth. That's our target. That's the center of the target. In devotion, we want to fix our mind upon Krishna. Man manapava mad bhakto madhyaji man namasko. That's our target. And these four things enhance that one thing. And that one thing is what we want. So we accept those four things. Cultivate those and help one another. If somebody that we're associating with is having some weakness in one of these four things, we don't like smash them or something like that. Shun them or ridicule them. We try to help them. Compassion. We don't pretend that a bad thing wasn't done, if there's a bad thing that's been done. But we try to help them. Help them acknowledge the bad, be honest, the bad thing has been done. Now let's restore the proper thing so that one can fix the mind upon the personality of Godhead. And that's what our collective association is for, sadhu sangha, to help one another achieve that. So that's a re-diving more deeply into the topic that we discussed this morning. And now for this afternoon's class. The next five verses are Maharaj Pariksit very expertly addressing Mother Earth. So he's had the challenges: Dharma, property, and perpetrators. These three categories. So he's addressed the Dharma component. Now he's going to turn to Mother Earth component. And his expertise is exhibited. What he does, her situation doesn't change exactly, because the situation will change when he addresses the perpetrator. But he shows her empathy. He acknowledges what the deeper cause of her lamentation is. The deeper cause of her lamentation is not just this guy, this personality of Kali guy. It's that Krishna is no longer present. Krishna was present. And when Krishna was present, Mother Earth, you were resplendent. You were so happy and supplying everything, and Krishna's not present anymore. That's the cause of your unhappiness. And I sympathize with you too, because Krishna is my relative and he's absent. And my grandfather, Arjuna, and his brothers, the Pandavas, they left also because Krishna left. I'm bereft of their association too. So he's empathizing with her situation. But you also are very unhappy because there are so many persons in Krishna's absence where this perpetrator guy is really making mischief. So now I will take care of that mischief maker. And Mother Earth is very pacified. Well, read the verses. The purports are not so long, but so mainly listen to the manner in which Maharaj Pariksit addresses Mother Earth. Starting with text 26 through 30, chapter 17. The burden of the earth was certainly diminished by the personality of Godhead and by others as well. The others as well as the associates of the personality of Godhead descended with him. By their presence, Mother Earth was very happy. Burden was there. Therefore, the Lord descended with his associates. The burden was relieved. When he was present as an incarnation, all good was performed simply because of his auspicious footprints. Now, the chaste one, being unfortunately forsaken by the personality of Godhead, laments her future with tears in her eyes. For now she is being ruled and enjoyed by lower class men who pose as rulers. Prabhupada, in the purport, addresses this sorry circumstance where it doesn't matter what system you have, whether it's democracy or communism or dictatorship or whatever the other forms of government are that you learn in political science classes. There's no qualified person. What to do? Prabhupada addresses, make qualified persons from unqualified persons. Challenging? Definitely challenging. Possible? Definitely possible. How is it done? You need qualified persons to make qualified persons. It really takes going back to some other statements made earlier in this section. You need Brahminical culture. You need qualified teachers, the real ones, not the name ones, but the real ones, that have qualities of a Brahmana. And they have received their training from qualified Brahmanas, this descending system of knowledge. And then those qualified Brahmanas can train the qualified Kshatriyas, however challenging. Take away protection of Brahminical culture, it's not going to happen. So how to bring back in Brahminical culture? These four pillars of Brahminical culture need to be restored within people in general so that they are fit recipients of the transcendental knowledge that Brahmanas can pass on. And there must be qualified, even one, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described, even one moon-like person, he's described like this, that what is the use of so many stars in the sky? If there's just one full moon, then everything is illuminated. I will consider my mission successful if even one person can receive that which I have given and continue it on properly. The Prabhupada said as Bhaktisiddhanta wished, so I am saying, I'm very happy to have so many moon-like boys and girls. I'll put it to the girl. But that's what he wanted. But we follow these, cultivate, strengthen these standards, pridelessness, compassion, proper control of the senses, the pillars of abiding by truth, and dedicating all things to the personality of Godhead, with those qualifications, receiving this descending mercy, and then having received it, living it, and teaching by example and by precept. That's the recommendation he's presenting in a summary way within the purport. Maharaj Prikshit, text 28. Who could fight 1,000 enemies single-handedly, thus pacified the personality, religion, and the earth. Then he took up his sharp sword to kill the personality of Kali, who is the cause of irreligion. Well, when the personality of Kali saw that sharp sword, he headed for cover. When the personality of Kali understood that the king was willing to kill him, he did two things. He abandoned the marks of a king, the crown, the attire, the royal robe, and the pretense, and with our acharyas described, because when you're a king, when challenged in combat, you combat. But he understood, I'm going to lose. Because I'm not a Kshatriya at all, I'm a pretender. So he took off the pretense, the robes and marks of a king. Second thing he did was he fell at the feet of Maharaj Prikshit and clasped the feet of Maharaj Prikshit and, I surrender. Now because I've surrendered, I'm your subject, please protect me. Very clever fellow. Maharaj Prikshit considered, you are the personification of irreligion, and you have already made havoc in my kingdom, and I am not going to make the mistake of also violating irreligion because of your influence, because it would be irreligious of me, despite your deserving of punishment, if because you surrendered, then I took your life, so I'll spare your life. I'll abide by principle of the Kshatriya code. You've surrendered. And now you're a citizen in my kingdom. Maharaj Prikshit, who was qualified to accept surrender and worthy of being sung in history, did not kill the poor surrendered and fallen Kali, but smiled compassionately, for he was kind to the poor. So our acharyas describe, his anger hadn't subsided. It wasn't like, I'm going to get you kind of anger. It was, religious principles have been violated, and I'm a Kshatriya to uphold religious principles. That kind of anger. Appropriate for a Kshatriya kind of anger. So his gentle smile is an indication that his anger hadn't dissipated yet. But he could understand the cleverness of the trickiness, I should say, of personality of Kali. And so he's now going to directly address the personality of Kali. To be continued. Just a summary comment, once again, that the whole scene that has just unfolded, our acharyas have disclosed, had two main purposes. To increase our focus of attention upon the personality of Godhead by having the bowl, the personality of Dharma in the form of a bowl, being put through that difficult circumstance for our edification. and our increased focus upon the personality of God. And that increased focus will come to these four things. We culture these four things in our concentration, even in trying circumstances, concentration upon the personality of God. Not that he just, like, as we were discussing this morning, somehow disappears. Or he's in the back seat and we're, you know, in a panic state trying to avoid an accident. But even if he's saying something, we can't hear because we're panicked. So to not be in that condition, but to always be concentrated upon the personality of God is to help us achieve that. The Bhagavatam is giving us those nice instructions, which is the graduate study of that nice explanation of the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, how to be on the path of liberation and be indifferent to temporary displays of the material energy. And the other was to glorify Maharaj Pariksha. Here's how a great soul, and we can follow the example of the great soul, addresses horrific conflict situations. Address Dharma, address Mother Earth, and address the person. So we're not Kshatriyas, we're not King Pariksha with swords, and we get out our sword and go chasing after somebody. I'm going to finish you. That's not our duty. It's Maharaj Pariksha's duty. But to be responsible and, as appropriate to our position, to address things as appropriate to our position and our capacity and our purity and so forth, to address things, we should be responsible. Okay. Any discussion? He will. He knows how to do it. He's the oh, yeah. I like Srimad Bhagavatam. I hope my liking of Srimad Bhagavatam is being passed on. Bless you.
Maharaj, you were describing about how the past sinful activities, they create impression and it fructifies later, by which we face certain things, difficult situations. I oftentimes feel that when that thing is, that fructifying is going on, I tend to further add fuel to the fire by contemplation. So,
what to do?
I don't know, I somehow feel that is it like just proper contemplation will avoid the further fructification of those?
Yeah. So, strive to take responsibility for those things. At least, you know, one's own part in that, because the whole affair is complex. It's not that the whole cosmos revolves around us. There's all kinds of other living entities that also have their, you know, their deserves, their seeds and their impressions and their, you know, the material energy is endlessly accommodating our complexities. It's not, we're the center of the universe. But to the extent that something directly is affecting, we take responsibility rather than blaming. Take responsibility for staying in Krishna consciousness and considering it to the best ability Krishna gives you and the resources Krishna has sent you, how to address the circumstance in Krishna consciousness, how to be of service to Krishna in this circumstance. As one cultivates what I just described, Krishna gives more and more ability, more and more insight, more and more capacity to remain in Krishna consciousness and be a better instrument to serve Him in a favorable way. And, you know, the association of devotees is one of those resources. Even it may be, you know, well, that devotee is part of my problem. And now that I think about it, I can think of a lot of devotees that are part of my problem. That's part of my problem. To be seeing they're my problem. Problem's over here, not over there. If I become more Krishna conscious, that is the best beginning point, at least, of addressing what's out there. There's purity over here. Spiritual qualification. Then I'll know how to act, and I'll have the strength to act in an appropriate manner. I'll be a better instrument of Krishna for that world around me. It starts with internal purity. This is our teaching. Dual assist here. Go ahead. Oh, are you going to go? Go ahead. Go ahead. Go for it. You got the microphone.
Guru Maharaj, I was listening to one of your lectures where you said one sentence that really led me to introspection. That is like, if you are Narada Muni, you will not feel this way. You will not be feel offended. And I think if there is Prabhupada, how will he handle the situation?
For the reference of those that don't know what he's talking about, the situation of Narada Muni going to visit Kuvera. And when he goes to visit Kuvera, just to pay him a visit, they're the sons of Kuvera, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, in a completely intoxicated state, completely naked, cavorting with naked women in the sacred river. And he's shocked to see this behavior. And they're so intoxicated, they have no shame. The ladies have shame. They cover themselves. And Nala Kuvera and Manigriva just come before Narada, completely shameless, which is an offense to the saintly person. Besides, it's so low class, very fallen. So Narada is not feeling offended, rather Narada is feeling compassionate, the reference. And now, when we're in a situation where someone may be acting towards us in a manner that factually may be offensive, how do we conduct ourselves? That's what he's speaking about.
So, in that sentence, like what I understood is, You want us to come to that stage?
To come Narada Munis. That would be nice. It'd be a better universe if we had more Narada Munis.
I am Manojan.
And what about Krishna? So where our contemplations go is going to determine how we transform or not. If our consciousness remains on the road, that's where we're going to go. And if our contemplations are, while I'm very tiny, this model to aspire for is so attractive, and our contemplation goes there, then we'll transform accordingly. That takes care of your question?
Yes.
Okay. Just hand the microphone, there's too much rattling here. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, I was wondering what would happen at the time of if I had to leave my body while I'm at my workplace. Say, because my question, here's the context of the question. So, on the weekends, I feel more blissful and connected to Krishna. During the weekdays, I would say that I maintain a good steady practice. But it's only a small fraction of hours during the day that I'm able to focus directly on Krishna. The remaining hours, nothing bad is happening, but I'm focusing on doing my work. I'm challenging, my mind is being challenged, so I'm really focusing on that. So it's kind of a neutral position, it would seem to me. So what would happen to me at time of death? I mean, would I all of a sudden... Is my state of mind more Krishna conscious at that time than I think it is? Is it just superficially kind of very mundane, or?
I was thinking as you were speaking, you can make a deal with Subhangada that she works, you stay at home, and you can be Krishna conscious 7 days. What do you think, huh? Hey, it's a nice plan. Or take turns. This year, this week, next week, next month. But that wasn't your question. Krishna certainly sees our effort, and Krishna reciprocates with our effort. So, having chosen rightfully the path of Grihastha, the duty is there to perform occupational work. So, now how to perform occupational work? That has its challenges, knowing what to do and how to do it and then doing it. So Krishna sees one's sincerity and Krishna reciprocates with that sincerity. So reciprocating with your sincerity, Krishna may allow you to leave your body on the weekend instead of on the weekday. When you're blissfully in Krishna consciousness. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said this program of working hypothesis, what if something, is not a very fruitful path. But even Krishna does that, api chet, even if what Krishna is looking to is vajate mam ananyabhak. One is constantly striving in devotion in the various circumstances of life. And if at one of those more challenging moments or comparatively between the two, more challenging on the weekdays than on the weekends, and that's when you leave your body, Krishna sees the effort that you're making, not just, you know, how successful you have been in remaining Krishna conscious in the workplace. He sees the effort. We'll say it the other way. That is, the Krishna consciousness that you experience on the weekend, when there isn't that challenge, says something about the Krishna consciousness that you have on the weekend. If it's circumstantial, it's not fully Krishna conscious yet. depending upon circumstance, I can be very Krishna conscious. Give me a challenge. Where did my Krishna consciousness go? Krishna consciousness is not created by circumstance. It's independent. Ahoitukika pratiyatama. That's Krishna consciousness. Without hetu, without cause, and without check of any circumstance. Because it's not circumstantial. So if my Krishna consciousness is circumstantial, then it's not a deep Krishna consciousness. So, continue in the performance of your prescribed duty, striving for Krishna consciousness. And challenging circumstances are welcomed by those that are faithful on the path of devotion. As I'm saying that and thinking about my present circumstance. Oh, challenging. Chairman of the GBC, which means being chairman of our society, our whole worldwide society. Who wants that one? Challenging. I was speaking yesterday with Deva Prasta, who is the interim temple president here in Potomac. And, challenging for him, very challenging. And the complexities are very substantial. And the waves and the whirlpools are... And he's hoping it's temporary. Get out of the pool and get out of the land where he feels it's less challenging. But those challenging situations can also be impetuses that make us strong. In any case, it's your duty as a householder to have that particular type of challenge. So, there are options that you have, and you know what they are. In principle, the options could be look for a situation where there's employment where it's less of the yucky stuff in the workplace. But to do that, where do you find it, and what does that mean in other practical terms of your student loan, and so forth and so on. So that you accept what you have, because for a variety of reasons it makes sense to have what you have. There's the good and there's the bad and so on. But you can choose to move in a different direction. At least gradually. If Krishna so desires, then something like that might happen. As you were contemplating, go into law practice with devotees. So the workplace atmosphere is more devotional. Etc., 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 etc. What does that mean? How to do that? And so on. Meet your challenges with courage and conviction, and you do the best you can, and count on Krishna noticing, taking full account of the sincere efforts that you're making. And as you practice like that, your sincere efforts become better and more empowered. And depending upon your standing with Krishna, your Krishna consciousness, that's going to determine where you go, not whether it's on weekdays or weekend that you leave your body.
I have two questions. I'm thinking about how we always we should raise the kids in a Krishna conscious way so that...
We always do what?
We should raise the kids in Krishna conscious environment so that they will go back to the Godhead.
So yes.
I'm thinking in the first place by getting married and we are the cause for them to come onto this material world. So indirectly, we are the cause for their sufferings in this material world. So how do we justify the marriage and having kids process?
I'm convinced. You have a nice ashram. Are you ready? The answer to your question is that Krishna has an arrangement for each of us, and there's categories of us, and the grahastha is one of those categories. Krishna created the varna and ashram system. So grahastha is one of those ashrams created by Krishna, so it's authorized. And that grahastha ashram, if taken up with proper understanding and the proper application of that understanding and the proper spirit of that understanding, then it's the suitable means for certain living entities so disposed to cross over the ocean of material existence. That's the justification. It's an arrangement by Krishna for a certain category, a large group of living entities in the human form of life to cross over the ocean of material existence. Now it's incumbent upon a person who takes shelter of that ashram to do those three things: understand, apply those understandings, and take up the spirit of what does that position require. And then this ocean of material existence shrinks. The example given in the Bhagavatam is shrinks like the amount of water in the footprint of a calf. Whereas before it was a whole ocean. It just shrinks. It's mystical. It doesn't mean if you're inattentive, it stays the footprint of a calf. If you become inattentive, it becomes an ocean again. Just like that. Just as it shrank, it becomes an ocean again. And you're struggling, oh, how did I get in this ocean? You got Krishna. But suitable boat to cross over the ocean of material existence if done in the manner mentioned. It's more a matter of understanding what is my nature, and if it's my nature, if it's appropriate for my nature to be in this ashram, then let me be in this ashram, let me take it up in the proper way, and cross over the ocean of material existence. And when you're on the other side of the ocean of material existence, no one's waiting there with, you know, a clipboard saying, okay, what ashram were you in? Okay, you're over there. You're in Brahmacharya ashram? Very nice, you're over there. There's no consideration which boat you crossed in. It's that you apply yourself in the proper way. Are there challenges? Yes. Are there challenges in the Brahmacharya ashram, Sannyas ashram, and Varnaprastha ashram? You betcha. There's challenges. There's danger. In any ashram, there's danger in the material world. And our business is to cross over the other side of it. You said you had several, that's one. That takes care of them all? Okay, fine. Those who would like to ask a question, please put your hand in the air so we can give you the microphone.
Time for me, sir.
Right up, okay.
You have time?
Sure.
Otherwise, I can forego
on Krishna's time.
Sri Krishna Maharaj, I accept my humble obeisances. For a long time I have seen you. My question is that in Shishkastakam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentioned in the third, Athinada Pishunichina Puru Vishveshmana, Malina Malina, Kirtaniya Sudahari. In the material world, we live, you know, we have the body, either male, female, and working in a different position. How to transcend become Thinadati? Thank you.
The punchline is how to transcend and come to the position of Thinadati? That was the question?
Yes, how? Because we know that somebody is in a, particularly here, you know, most of them are professional, you know, or somebody is in a different. But to invite that, and you know, to chant, you know, because if I'm in a position, I'm a CEO, it's very difficult to become the clerk's place and become the same.
Okay. Well, there are variations on the theme, but there's two primary models. One is by hearing, and the other is by suffering. Pick your model. The suffering model says, Ishwaro hum humbogi, and one suffers because you're not the Ishwara, nor are you the enjoyer. And again, when you get beat up again and again and again, then you realize that's not the fact. In fact, I'm very tiny. And one can learn that just from hearing. Saves a lot of trouble. So that's better. Try to learn by hearing nicely. And then, if Krishna has given me such and such ability, my young profession is now moving because I completed my years of education and now I have my nice job and my nice car and my nice home and my nice family and my nice this and nice that. Although at any moment the bubble can burst or my health can collapse or something or something or something, and it's, you know, it's very unstable. Therefore, in fact, I'm dependent upon the mercy of Krishna. And I can learn that by the school of hard knocks or by hearing. We encourage the process of hearing. But there's a backup plan also. Yeah.
Thank you for your class. You were saying how Srila Prabhupada said that he wanted, you know, one moon and not so many millions.
He wanted what?
One moon.
One moon.
One moon. Bhaktisiddhanta said.
Bhaktisiddhanta said that. And then you were kind of joking with this devotee about, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful to be so much like Narada Muni? And I was just wondering, how does a person become a moon? How do you become a moon?
What are the characteristics of a moon? That's what you want to know? Or how does one become a moon?
Yeah.
That's your question? Second one?
Yes.
Okay, turn that little button off. In chapter 5 of first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni describes how he became a Muni, in fact Narada Muni. And the elements are there. In fact, he starts from a complete nobody. Like, nobody. He has a mother, doesn't speak anything about his father, like, without a father. Single parent kid. That's a Shudra. His mother doesn't have any education. Her only occupation is she's taking care of people at an inn. That's what she does. And he's helping her. And then he loses his mother. She dies untimely. So he's nobody with no shelter. But the elements that happened that made him into Narada Muni was, he received mercy. just so happened that during the 4 months of the rainy season, some sages came to that inn. And his mother gave him the service you serve them. Bring their meals and wash their clothes and do some menial service, whatever they want. So in that service mood, he gained their favor. Then he could hear their conversation, so he got the messages and just continued on in that, you know, description. Because of his nice quality, he describes, I wasn't like most children, very talkative, I was very quiet and I listened and was not simply playful, I wanted to hear from them, and as I heard from them, my attraction for them and their message grew more and more, and so they showed even more mercy. Just escalated. And they taught him confidential things, and they instructed him in chanting of a mantra, and taught him a process of meditation upon the personality of Godhead. They gave him remnants of their food, after which he felt something changing in his life. But the, you know, incremental steps and steps and steps of getting their mercy and his reciprocating, receiving that and reciprocating nicely with them. And then that association left. The 4 months of the rainy season were over and they went away. He didn't go with them. He stayed and continued to serve his mother, and then she died. One day going to get water from the well, when she was bitten by a serpent and instantly died. And he didn't moan and complain and whine and carry on. He understood, as we've been describing, somehow there's a plan of the Lord. And he accepted it immediately. This is the plan of the Lord. And so he left that place and just went traveling about, continuing to chant the mantra and meditate upon the teachings and experience life in different circumstances. And then one day, seated on a banyan tree, he was performing that meditation and chanting of his mantra as instructed by those saintly people. And suddenly the Lord appeared before him, because his meditation was upon the Lord. He showed his mercy. And then suddenly disappeared. It's like the sequence of things. In his case, it wasn't even like he went on a search to find mercy. The mercy came to him. But one needs to somehow bump into some mercy and receive it with an open heart. And then continue to grow in that relationship with those givers of mercy. And he applied the things that he heard from those persons. And invoked more mercy and so on. And he lived his life in that way. When the Lord disappeared, then he was looking. Where'd you go? And he was crying, the little boy. He heard this voice resounding like the sound of thunder. The Lord was speaking to him. Normally one does not see me unless one is fully qualified. But because of your sincerity, I've shown myself to you. You will not see me again. This was just to encourage you. Continue the rest of your life in the same way. And you will achieve my shelter. And so he did. He followed. And so he did. He achieved his shelter. But the Lord had some service plan for him. So he made the arrangement that the next day of Brahma, he took birth as Brahma's son to do what he does now. Does the Narayani program. So we can have a nice role model. Although we're only Manoj or only Vita, or we're only little people. Obscure little people, but he was an obscure little boy. Just had faith and good association and grew. Yes?
Yeah.
Maharaj, the tendency to project a nice picture of oneself upon others, I'm talking about myself, like how this tendency is there, I mean, ranging from the gross to the subtle ones. I was thinking, like, is it due to this false ego or false identification with the body? And also, like, will it be present till this false ego is completely dissolved?
Will it be possible that this will be there until what?
False ego is dissolved.
Yes.
What are the...
Integrates. False ego does its thing until it's gone. Integrates.
What are the practical measures to overcome?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And always serve the devotees of the Lord in a humble mood. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And here Lakshmi Vans nice kirtans. Go on Harinam. Sometimes take your children, distribute transcendental literature, serve the devotees, and always chant the Lord. I felt this energy coming from that side.
Actually, I was contemplating what you said in the morning till I came into this program. And then my material conditioning took over, and then it wanted me to ask this question to you. I was thinking, okay.
That's an interesting preamble.
So it said, okay, now you've got to do it, practice it, like it will become a second nature. And it is also, I have seen myself personally that when things are going pretty well, probably, you know, I was able to concentrate and, you know, thinking everything is good.
Sounds like I've made a vagueness statement.
Pardon?
The weekend program.
A weekend. And when the real calamity, or, you know, when the situation is not in control, due to whatever reason, then, you know, frustration kicks in and not able to really concentrate on Krishna consciousness. Then I was just thinking, as I was telling before, in a material way, you know, working in a project management, if you take anything for that matter, I'm looking at this as a project, of course. I'm not trying to compare this with, this is my life project.
I got it. The Krishna conscious project.
Yeah, Krishna conscious.
And the members of the team is the family.
Yeah. And then when we do a project plan, as a part of it, we always think about there are assumptions, constraints, and risk factor. And then, you know, so we plan such a way that I'm looking at this risk factor as like when I undergo this type of situations. And now how do I, because as you rightly said, I need to use it till it becomes, you know, second nature, the risk is going to be there. So, and then we have certain metrics in place, you know, we keep checking constantly and say, okay, where are we in terms of...
Good.
So, I would like to know, is there like anything specific which you can suggest?
I was following you right up until the past. You took a U-turn. Where'd you go? What can I suggest?
You know, in terms of practical...
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. I always serve the devotees and go on Harinam and come to me. Join this kirtan. Distribute Prabhupada's books.
Once again, adding to that, that's basically...
There's an internal cultivation, I think, which is what we were speaking about this morning. Internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. It's besides, you know, this behavior, that behavior, it's the internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness, of entering, using Prabhupada's phrase, entering into the spirit of the understanding of our purpose of life. So that's an internal cultivation. It's a qualitative absorption that's, you know, between us and Krishna. It's very personal. And, you know, we're torn. We're torn between our conditioning, going back to our discussion this morning, our conditioned self, and what we know is far better option than our conditioned self, our eternal self, our transcendental self, and our natural quality of love for Krishna. And that's the classic struggle, you know, the sura and the asura that's within, the divine and the not-so-divine that's within. And so continue to place weights on the side of our eternal spiritual interest. And just keep going down that path, up and down that path, and pretty soon it's a natural path. One's tendency becomes like that. Because I continue to invest consciousness in my relationship with Krishna and withdraw consciousness from simply finding happiness in terms of, you know, the material projects of life. We don't become negligent in what our worldly duties are. But even in doing those worldly duties, it's with a different purpose, a different consciousness, a purpose of life consciousness. Not just to get a reward or a, you know, perk or a pat on the back or a bonus or a, at least, you know, continue in the workforce or something like that. With a higher purpose. It's more challenging. But if the purpose doesn't become different, the application of that principle of purpose takes a particular form, but the principle, the purpose doesn't change. Then you can apply that skill or focus or concentration even more upon your day-to-day life that's outside of those challenging circumstances, and borrow the strength from those less challenging circumstances and carry it into the more challenging circumstances. And Krishna gives ability. Krishna gives remembrance. It works. The spirit, the internal potency of Krishna is real. It certainly feels different being in the internal potency and struggling hard with the external potency. Qualitative difference. It's real. And say yes to this one, say no to that one. Without being negligent or irresponsible, but try to work it within the internal potency. Try to work for Krishna. You know, principles that Krishna would be pleased by because you're applying them with devotion to Him. It's a cultivation. It's an internal cultivation. Okay. I think we're done. Do you have a question? You sure?
Can I ask one question?
Last question.
Maharaj, I heard your lecture during last Vyas Puja, and you were talking about this importance of loving relationships. I see that even if I choose proper persons for cultivating loving relationships, Krishna does such a thorough job of cleaning the heart that he he will not allow me to, you know, pass over some devotee. He will make me, like, unless I really accept other persons as they are, you know, from the heart, he is not going to leave me. That's what I feel.
It's beyond that, though. It's not just the expression that you just shared. Is there's something out there that doesn't suit me. There's something wrong out there. Instead of, there's something wrong in here. That's a fundamental boo-boo. A mistake. Fundamental. One should not think like that. Fundamentally. Using this expression that Manoj was referring to, ask yourself this question. If Prabhupada was situated in a relationship with this person, what would happen compared to what's happening with me in this relationship? Is the problem over there? The problem's over here. Let me address the problem over here. And by addressing the problem over here, I can have some impact on the dynamic of the relationship that's not happening in the way that I would want it to happen. And in fact, it may be there isn't a problem over there, the problem is over here simply. And they're responding to the problem that's over here because of the way I'm behaving, thinking the problem is over there. So my, thank you for projecting, is bringing about a reaction to my behavior. At least, whatever is happening, I'll take responsibility for becoming a better instrument of Krishna and a better servant of Krishna's will in this service that I have, this cultivation of a relationship, loving relationship. I take that. And so again, as you act in that consciousness, all kinds of things start to happen that brings the situation up. At least, you know, the Krishna factor becomes more into play than the struggle factor. Okay, Lakshmi Bhan?
He's outside.
Ask him if he wants to.
He's here.
There he is. Would you like to sing another Hare Krishna song?